Covered with Rabbanit Nechama Goldman Barish, a new three-part mini-series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For source sheets to accompany this podcast, visit www.elmad.pardes.org/uncovered.
Welcome to the Pardes podcast series, Uncovered. This is Nechama Goldman Barish, and in this podcast, we will talk about hair covering. This topic will be divided into two parts. In part one, we will discuss the concept of women wearing a head covering, called dat yudit in the Talmud, reflecting the practice of Jewish women. In part two, we will discuss the concept of se'ar be'isha erva, the idea that the hair of the woman is nakedness in some way, and also review modern-day halachic rulings. In many communities, when a woman marries, she begins to cover her hair. If you look around observing communities, the range of hair covering can vary from a colorful headband to a baseball cap or fedora, to various sized scarves, to big hats, to human hair wigs, to women wearing wigs and a second head covering in some Hasidic communities, and in others in which women shave their heads and wear a kerchief or wig over their bald head. It can make you dizzy. In addition, a large portion of observant women do not cover their hair at all outside of sacred spaces such as synagogue, or often to light the Shabbat candles like my grandmother did. One of my grandmothers always wore a head covering or wig. My other grandmother would put on a doily when she went to synagogue or lit candles. Questions abound, and the topic is rarely neutral, touching as it does on identity and femininity, sexuality and modesty. We will open with probably the most important text for this conversation, the Mishnah and Ketubot, which deals with the cases in which women can be divorced without their ketubah. In the Tractate of Ketubot 72a, the Mishnah says as follows: these are the women who are to be divorced without receiving their ketubah, a wife who violates dat Moshe or dat Yehudit. The Mishnah lists women who forfeit their ketubah because of their behavior. The ketubah is the Jewish marriage contract that ensures women a certain amount of financial support in the case of divorce or widowhood. The Mishnah divides into two halves the defining behaviors in which a woman can be divorced without her ketubah. In the first half, it presents violations of a biblical nature called dat Moshe, including serving her husband untithed food and having sex with her husband while nida, in other words, sexually prohibited. In the examples, the women withhold crucial information and cause their husbands to sin. In the second half, the Mishnah references, for the first time, dat yudit, which seems to suggest the practices of the daughters of Israel that are not expressly written in the Torah. And this is the way Rashi understands the term. These include going out with her head uncovered, spinning in the marketplace, speaking to any man, and cursing her in-laws in front of her husband, as well as talking so loudly in her house that her neighbors hear her. The Mishnah defines uncovered head as a violation of dat yudit. From the other examples we understand, it touches on the proper behavior of the daughters of Israel, possibly in distinction to women outside of Jewish society. Most of the examples have to do with a Jewish woman's behavior. The head covering, in contrast, is the only example touching on dress or outer appearance of the daughter of Israel, suggesting that it has to do with her identity as well as her behavior, and that violating this norm is worthy of divorce without a ketubah. The Gemara questions this attitude in the Mishnah. After quoting the Mishnah, it goes on to state that head covering is not only an issue of dat yudit, but rather it stems from the Torah. And it quotes the pasuk, the verse from Bamidbar, the book of Numbers, where it states, "Vehemid ha-kohen et ha-isha lifnei Hashem, upara et rosh ha-isha." After he has made the woman stand before the Lord, the priest shall bear the woman's head. This is the most commonly quoted verse in the Torah when it comes to head covering, since it is the only verse that anchors the tradition in biblical text. The verse is describing one stage in the ritual undergone by the sota, a woman accused rightfully or wrongfully of committing adultery by her husband. At this stage, part of the ritual testing her innocence involves having her head bared by the high priest. The earliest Tanaitic source that we have interpreting the book of Bamidbar is a Midrash Halakha called Sifrei, which is believed to have come out of the school of Rabbi Yishmael. In its interpretation on the verse cited, it states, "Limeid al benot Yisrael shehin mechasot roshehen, va'af al pi she'ein ra'aya ledavar, zecher ledavar, v'tikach tamar efer al rosha." The translation of the interpretation is as follows. It teaches us that the daughters of Israel would cover their heads. And even though there's no proof to the matter, there is an allusion to the matter in the verse, "And Tamar took ashes and put them on her head." There are two points here for consideration. The first is that the verse teaches us that the daughters of Israel, it doesn't specify married or unmarried, covered their heads. The second point is that there's no proof from the text itself, says the Midrash Halakha, but an allusion from an unrelated story in the book of Samuel about the daughter of King David who covers her head in ashes in the aftermath of a brutal rape by her half-brother, clearly a sign of mourning. In other words, the Sifrei does not see the Sota verse as definitive proof and looks elsewhere to a far-fetched example in which a woman covers her head with something to ground the practice in Scripture. It is clear to the author of the Midrash that the daughters of Israel cover their heads. The looming question is, where is this practice prescribed? Is it that women have an obligation from the Torah, or is it a practice that takes on the weight of communal norm? The Talmud, after quoting this verse as the source for women's head covering, goes on to quote an earlier Tannaitic source in the name of Rabbi Yishmael's school. Presumably, the Sifrei I just quoted, but with a major twist. The version that the Talmud quotes in the name of the school of Rabbi Yishmael is as follows. Azhara lebno Yisrael shelo yetzu b'paru arosh. It is a warning to the daughters of Israel not to go out with bared head, meaning the verse in the Parsha of Sota is a warning. The Talmud understands this Midrash Halakha to implicitly include a warning, possibly a prohibition, and not just a violation of common Jewish practice. This understanding leads to a fundamental question on the Mishnah. If head covering is biblical in nature, why is it classified as dat yudit in the Mishnah? The Gemara does not directly answer the question, but it goes on to explain that according to the Torah, a basket would be enough of a head covering to fulfill the Torah's requirement. According to Dat Yudit, however, a basket would not be enough and would violate a prohibition of some sort. So let's pause for a moment and think about what kind of head covering a basket is. A basket is something that perches on the top of the head, maybe on the crown of the head, and brings to mind something along the nature of a kippah, something that covers the head, not all of the head, because baskets don't usually extend down towards the ears, but some sort of head covering. Not a hair covering, but that nonetheless fulfills the minimal requirement that the Talmud thinks the Torah prescribes. Dat Yudit would come in and would suggest that a basket would not be enough for the daughters of Israel. Possibly all women wore baskets in the surrounding cultures. And so a basket would not be enough either for modesty or for possibly identity, neither of which are explicitly referred to in the Talmud. But, you know, the question is, why is a basket not enough? We'll go on. The Gemara brings a statement in the name of an important Talmudic Amora, Rabbi Yochanan, who lives after the Tannaitic period. If she is wearing a basket, her head is not unbared. Well, this statement seems to suggest that a basket would be enough to fulfill a woman's obligation, thus contradicting the opening premise of the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan does not distinguish between a biblical obligation and dat yudit. So one could argue, based on Rabbi Yochanan, who is later than the Tannaitic Sifrei, that the whole practice is based on the custom of women, otherwise known as dat yudit, and women wore baskets. The editor of the Gemara has the challenge of fitting Rabbi Yochanan in with its premise that the basket is biblically mandated, suggesting that the test case in the Mishnah is one in which her head is covered with the basket, or it would have been cited as a violation of Dat Moshe, based on its reading of the verse in Bamidbar. Then brings the reading of Rabbi Zera, who lived after Rabbi Yochanan, in an attempt to fit together all of the pieces we have laid out. Namely, the Gemara's reading of the verse in Sota, together with the school of Rabbi Yishmael, concluding that head covering is from the Torah, the Mishnah, which only references head covering as Dat Yudit, and finally, Rabbi Yochanan's statement that a basket means the head is not bared. Using Rabbi Zera, the Gemara is able to neatly fit together all three pieces by mapping out three spaces in which a woman goes out. If we are talking about the marketplace, her head is considered bare if she only wears a basket, since dat yudit requires more than a basket. The marketplace, of course, is a very public space. The concerns for promiscuity and thus the demand for modesty are paramount. A lot goes on in the marketplace, including seductions. It is not surprising, then, that Dat Yudit would broaden the minimum requirement of head covering in order to maintain a higher standard of modesty in the Yudit community, meaning the Jewish community, of course. If we are talking about her private spaces, Rabbi Zera, meaning her courtyard, which is both outdoors yet privately owned, and includes the inner space of her home by association, then lo hinachta bat la'avram avinu sheyoshevet tachat ba'ala. You have not left a daughter to Avram Avinu who will remain married under her husband, says the Gemara. Rabbi Zera explains that Rabbi Yochanan cannot be requiring a basket in private space, for if so, you have not left a daughter of Avram Avinu who will remain married. What a fantastic observation that Dat Yudit in both directions, towards greater head covering in public space and no head covering in private space, even if it is outdoors like a courtyard, is dictated by the communal norms of the women. Back to the Gemara. We have yet to resolve how the statement of Rabbi Yochanan fits in smoothly. Is there a scenario in which a woman's head is not bared if she wears a basket? Where? It can fit, says the Gemara, if we assume that Rabbi Yochanan's statement was specifically talking about a woman walking from alleyway to alleyway and from courtyard to courtyard. In other words, in semi-private spaces, a woman can fulfill her requirement with merely a basket. This concludes a classic Talmudic discourse in which we weave together multiple layers of cross-generational conversation in order to create a halachic structure. In this case, the biblical requirement is necessary only in semi-private space. The Dat Yudit practice affects very public space, like a marketplace, and it seems as if private space requires no head covering at all, based on the observation that women will not accept such a restriction. Rashi has a very interesting commentary on this passage in the Talmud. He brings two possible interpretations of the Sota passage, which have direct halachic implications. He says, from the fact that we disgrace her in this manner, commensurate to her act of making herself attractive to her lover, we can infer that it is forbidden. In the first approach, he uses the biblical text in the way that the Talmud Bavli seems to assume a prohibition based on the ritual. The second approach is less absolute. He writes as follows, alternatively, since scripture states and he shall uncover, we can infer that at that time her head was not uncovered. We thus deduce that it is not the practice of the daughters of Israel to go out with their heads uncovered. This is the main explanation. End of quote. Rashi deduces that it is not the practice of the daughters of Israel, and in fact prefers this explanation. In other words, he deduces that the daughters of Israel go out with head coverings. This to me seems in line with the Sifrei that we referenced earlier. It also seems to me to reflect a clearer reading of the Mishnah. That is to say, there is no proof. However, the Sota text suggests that the practice of the daughters of Israel dates back to biblical times when they would cover their heads. And this is why the Sota's head is uncovered, as a way of disgracing her for going outside the communal norm and potentially engaging in adultery. And this is why a woman who deviates from this ancient practice, so prevalent among the daughters of Israel, must be divorced without a ketubah. Not getting your ketubah is a very heavy punishment, given that a divorced woman would have had no independent means of support without the fee from the ketubah, unless her father had endowed her with considerable property. It sends a very strong message that such behavior will not be tolerated by society. Many Rishonim seem to follow Rashi's second opinion in classifying head covering as a matter of practice of Dat Yudit that has binding halachic power, but is not an explicit prohibition. In other words, they rule along the lines of the Mishnah, or a clean reading of the Mishnah, that head covering is Dat Yudit and not Dat Moshe. It is interesting to note that despite the Talmud's claim of a biblical prohibition, none of the Sefer Mitzvot, books that try to deduce how many positive and negative mitzvot make up the traditional 613 mitzvot in the Torah, count head covering as a positive or a negative mitzvah. Even the Rambam, who rules authoritatively according to the Talmud Bavli's discussion that we cited above, does not include it in his Sefer Mitzvot where he counts up the 613. Let's look at the Rambam for a moment. In his Laws on Ishut in the Mishnah Torah, chapter 24, law 11, he follows the Mishnah in breaking down the ways in which a woman is divorced without a ketubah. He first enumerates Dat Moshe as did the Mishnah. The startling change is that he incorporates the Talmud's conclusion on head covering and puts as the first example of a violation of Dat Moshe a woman who goes out to the marketplace with the hair of her head bare. This is actually going a bit further than the Talmud, who did not specify hair of the head, but repeatedly only refer to the uncovering of the head. In the second half, he cites examples of Dat Yehudit, and I'll read part of it in the original. Ve'ezohi Dat Yehudit, hu minhag hatzniut shenahagu b'no Yisrael. Ve'elohen hadvarim she'im asa achan mehen avral Dat Yehudit. Yotzala shukul mavoy mefudash, v'rosha parua. Ve'en aleha redid kechol hanashim, afal pi she'sa'ara mechusa b'mitpachat. What is considered to be Dat Yehudit? Those are the modesty practices which the daughters of Israel practice. If a woman has done one of the following, she is considered to have violated Dat Yehudit: going out in the marketplace or in a through alley with her head uncovered and without the headscarf that all other women wear, even though her hair is covered by a kerchief. He then continues, or making her rounds in the marketplace with rouge or the like on her face, on her forehead or cheeks, in the manner of the promiscuous non-Jewish women. First, the Rambam defines Dat Yehudit as being the modesty practices which the daughters of Israel follow. He explains that the headscarf, in addition to the kerchief, is what Dat Yehudit mandates, and he concludes by contrasting the daughters of Israel to the promiscuous non-Jewish women. The kerchief might cover the hair, but the headscarf seems to identify the woman as Yehudiyah or Jewish. The Rambam seems to feel that Jewish women are more modest than non-Jewish women, and this is what gives them their identity. He also extends public space to include through alleys, presumably because of the greater foot traffic in through alleys compared to a courtyard. To make things a little more interesting, the Rambam, in a different section of Mishneh Torah, the Laws of Yisurei Biyah, chapter 21, halacha 17, writes that Jewish women, married and unmarried, should not go out to the marketplace with their head uncovered. This seems to follow his train of thought above, that head covering reflects the modesty of Dat Yehudit. The Torah and Shulchan Aruch pick up this halacha of the Rambam's regarding unmarried women and rule accordingly. In practice, it does not seem to have been adopted by the mainstream halachic community, at least by today's standards. As stated earlier, the Rambam, despite classifying the head covering as Dat Moshe, does not count it as one of the 613 mitzvot. How can we explain his calling head covering Dat Moshe, but not counting it as one of the 613? That encroaches on the complexities of defining categories of halakha. Something can be binding without being clearly recognizable as biblical or rabbinic. One possible solution is to suggest that Rambam saw the Bavli's approach as linking the practice to the biblical text through an asmachta, or an anchor in the biblical text, but not as an absolute command. At this point, it behooves us to pause and wonder about Rambam's statement that married and unmarried women cover their heads when they go out to the market. We so strongly associate married women with head covering and see it as a transition from singlehood to married life. At Sheva Brachot, after the wedding, it is always a bit jarring to see the newly married woman, who we saw days earlier with free-flowing hair, show up to the party with either a full or partial head covering or a wig. Let's reference two Tannaitic sources that may give us a clue as to the origin of grounding the practice in marriage. In the first Mishnah, in the second chapter of Ketubot, the Mishnah asks, what indication is there in a marriage ceremony that a woman was a virgin when she married and had not been previously married? The question has to do with a fight over the worth of her ketubah. Her husband is dead, and the heirs want to get out of paying her the full 200 zuz. Think in the neighborhood of $50,000 that a virgin is awarded upon marriage, preferring to pay her only 100 zuz, which is awarded to non-virgins. The answer the Mishnah gives is, Im yesh edim sheyatzat behinuma v'rosha parua ktubata matayim, which means that one has to find witnesses to the wedding who can testify whether the bride went out with a hinuma, some sort of veil, and her head bared to the chuppah. The language of rosha parua, her head bared, brings us back to the verse on Sota, Upara et Rosha, what the priest does to the woman when he carries out the Sota ritual, and reinforces the Tannaitic and Amoraitic conversations we cited above, which grounded the practice in the biblical text, either as Dat Moshe or as Dat Yehudit. This Mishnah clearly suggests that a defining sign of virginity, or alternatively a first marriage, is a bared head covered only by a hinuma as the bride walks towards the marriage canopy. A final source, the Tannaitic, or early rabbinic text of the Tosefta, which was edited more or less at the same time as the Mishnah, in the Tractate of Ketubot, chapter 5, adds an interesting piece of information. Zomidat Adam Rasha, this is the quality or the characteristic of a wicked man. Shiroet ishto yotza v'rosha parua. He sees his wife going out with her head bared. Mitzvah l'garsha, it is a mitzvah for him to divorce her. A wicked man who allows his wife to go out with her head uncovered should be forced to divorce her, says the Tosefta. In the Mishnah, it was the man's prerogative to divorce his wife based on unseemly behavior. Here, the passage places responsibility to ensure that his wife covers her head on the husband. And society, or the court, seems to be able to step in and actually demand that he divorce her because he tolerates such a breach and impropriety. Her behavior is a reflection upon him and the community, and the Tosefta demands that he be held accountable as well as she. In addition, I read the Tosefta as indicating women covered their heads so as to distinguish between married and unmarried women in society, in contrast to Rambam's halacha. If a woman goes out without her head covering, thus blurring these boundaries, with her husband's permission no less, then we force him to divorce her for overstepping the ways in which we identify women as married and unmarried in our society in order to prevent promiscuity. Adultery is a much graver sin than non-marital sexuality, and identifying the married woman would be important to avoid any confusion in this regard. In addition, if I add in the .yud piece, it suggests that Jewish women had their own head coverings distinct from those of the non-Jewish women to identify them more specifically as belonging to the Jewish community. As we come to the end of this podcast, we have seen that the topic of head covering stems back to the sota whose head is uncovered. We have seen early rabbinic sources that seem to be clear as to the origin and the obligation of the practice, but there is consensus that Jewish women covered their heads. The Sifrei talked about the practices of the daughters of Israel, while the Talmud Bavli definitively asserts that it is biblically prescribed, while clarifying that a minimal head covering, a basket, fulfills its understanding of the implicit biblical obligation, but that the modesty norms of Dat Yudit mandate a greater degree of covering, particularly in public space. We saw different interpretations within Rashi as himself, which explained the Bavli, but also presented an independent reading reflecting the Sifrei and the Mishnah as a standalone text. And finally, we saw an interesting approach in the Rambam that extended the Dat Yudit to unmarried women in the marketplace. It seems that head covering straddles two different aspects of Jewish ritual, norms of modesty, and possibly some ritual of Jewish female identity. It's important to note that while Dat Yudit may sound flimsy in terms of its legal status, it is clear within the halachic discourse that it is binding both because of the ongoing practice and because of its perceived link to a biblical text. The idea of asmachta, something lurking just outside of an outright prohibition or commandment, is very pervasive in the discussion of head covering. Nonetheless, it's important to note that the other examples of Dat Yudit given by the Talmud and Rambam are no longer part of the discourse, because indeed practices have changed. Head covering is the last one standing, which is why we will continue with another podcast. In the next podcast, we will continue with part two of this topic and introduce another piece to the conversation, the classic statement that the hair of a woman is nakedness. This statement becomes immensely important in later halachic conversations from the Middle Ages onward and serves to move us forward as we consider contemporary positions on the conversation.
Thank you for listening to Uncovered with Rabbanit Nechama Goldman-Barish, a podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. Visit www.elmad.pardes.org for more in this series and other great content.